Looking for new threads? Well, we've got you covered at the Music Is Live podcast official merch store over at tpublic.com. Whether it's t-shirts, baseball tees, hoodies, coffee mugs, travel mugs, phone cases, or onesies for your infant rockers and metalheads, you can find everything you're looking for over at the Music Is Live podcast merch store at tpublic. Go to my link tree at linktr.ee/musicislivepodcast and get your merch today. Buy my stuff! Thanks for your support. Terranut is proud to offer you a natural nut bar chock full of healthy fats, minerals, and protein that meet your demands. Go to their website, www.terranut.com. You can order from them directly, and they will ship it to you. Use my coupon code, LUMAVS, and you will get a 25% discount on your first order. Terranut Superfood Snacks, www.terranut.com. Don't forget to use coupon code, LUMAVS, at checkout. Fuel your life.
Severed Angel, the deluxe edition of the self-titled debut album, available now. Pick up your copy today over at severedangel.com. Available on all streaming media platforms. Severed Angel, get ready to ride the dogs of war.
You're listening to the Music Is Life podcast with your host, Lou Mavs, on the Rat Salad Review Network. Music Is Life podcast. This is your host, Lou Mavs. Check out everything you need to know about the show over at my link tree, Music Is Life podcast. I am joined today by my southern brother from another mother, direct from Rat Salad Review. And his own new podcast called
Saturdays in the Fall.
Is that the new one? What was the college sports one that you were doing?
That is the college sports one. We changed the name because there was about 800 no huddles. We found out.
Well, you couldn't have confused them for No Jumper because No Huddle had talent. But yes.
Ah,
I said it.
That joke, that's an antique.
Who's the antique? Lena the plug?
Oh, it's fucking brilliant.
Oh,
at this case, she might be. I scratched that from the record. Anyways, Mr. James Lillicourt's in the house. James, what's up, buddy?
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good, man. How are you?
Surprisingly, for the last 2 weeks, you know, I've been. So the funny part was, a little pre-gaming for our the show that we do together, Rat Salad Review. My nephew told us, hey, he wants to go see Kiss. Until we saw how much the prices were for the darn tickets.
Let me guess, 300 for nosebleeds?
300 for the handicap accessible ones, which are like upper, like on the top of the bowl.
300 for the handicap one? That's criminal. to sit through 2 hours of Paul Stanley go, people! No.
So is he reverse Benjamin Buttoning where, you know, he's turning into a young child instead of being like an old man?
Oh, my God. Voice crack like you wouldn't believe.
Meanwhile, while that's going on, I was checking the benefit concert Whitechapel does every year is still only $35 a person.
Yeah, I think Whitechapel does pretty well for themselves where it's like, you know, they don't need to rip off the fans and. You know, I mean, it's funny. I was going through all my band tees and I realized I got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 Whitechapel shirts. And I think
I'm high quality stuff.
Yes. And I think I'm due for a new one eventually. But the unfortunate thing is that they don't do when they were more deathcore than they are now. And they have like the crazy splatter logo, which was when I first fell in love with and discovered the band. They don't do that anymore. Now it's like all straight font,
which is not fun anymore. I miss the one where you couldn't understand what the name of the band was. It was just all splatter squiggly stuff. It looked like something the devil vomited.
Yeah, pretty much. I remember my mother-in-law asked me, she's like, what's Whitechapel? And I said, oh, it's a band. And she said, oh, what do they name themselves after? I said, where Jack the Ripper did all of his murders. She's like, how could you listen to that stuff? I'm like, with great ease.
Oh, it's fucking brilliant.
With great ease, especially like I just watched their they just dropped their last music video for Ken, and it's amazing. Like it's all artistry, but it was like as soon as I started watching it, I was just like, You know, if they're shooting that where I think they're shooting that in the middle of winter, that's awfully cold.
Was it a part of Tennessee? I guess they were shooting it.
It looked like East Tennessee.
Wow.
In the winter with like all the trees with no leaves on them and everything. So I was like, yeah, that looks cold.
That's a band that does not deny its roots, and I respect them for staying true to where they're from.
Yes, absolutely. So it just looks like it, but you need to watch the video. It's a masterpiece. I think it's one of their better ones they've done.
You put it in the chat, so I definitely want to come around and check it out. But I remember how we got this this part of the conversation. We were talking about Kiss. Yeah, look, I saw the band once, and I love what the music meant to me growing up. I mean, look, it's music about boning. Anyone who tells you otherwise is lying. There's nothing evil about Kiss.
Well, the only thing evil is them trying to get into every woman's pants.
Well, Gene would like to tell you that he did, but Paul will tell you otherwise. Anyway, but he completely no-sold him once during Dick Clark's Rockin' New Year's 1993. He completely no-sold him. It was hilarious because then he's like, Gene tells the camera crew, can you turn that off for a second? And then he goes to Paul and he goes, will you stop insulting me like that in front of everyone? I was like, I never saw two aging rock stars act more diva-esque than that moment.
Why do I want to go see these guys in concert when I could just go down to the local bingle hall and see the same thing?
Emotional damage.
I mean, wow. He went there. But
I could have made it a lot worse.
Thanks for not. But the
I try to keep at least some standards here on this one. Okay, I'll completely deprave myself in another one. Okay,
we'll leave it to your imagination. But I did see Kiss in 2000 on what was supposed to be their farewell tour, which they then changed the narrative to be it was their farewell to Peter and Ace tour. But I'm like,
So name a person who has a harder time retiring, Gene and Paul or freaking Terry Funk did.
Well, here's the thing: when every time Terry Funk came back, I was happy. I'll flat out admit it, because some middle-aged and crazy Texan going around saying, "You son of a bitch!" I mean, come on. That's gold right there.
That just reminds me of the Memphis one where he's like yelling after Lawler, and then he just goes into the ring, starts beating up the mask jobbers and the jobbers in there. He's just yelling for Lawler.
You are a liar.
You're a liar.
He's squealing like higher, a pig.
And it's getting higher and higher and higher as the freaking promo and the match is going on. As it keeps going, he's just elevating the voice to just a feral hog squeal.
Now replace Terry Funk with Yosemite Sam, and it would work just as effectively.
Jerry Lawler is a baby finger, a baby finger, a baby finger.
Rest in peace, Terry. We love you, man.
I could go back to that Terry Funk episode. We got so many more freaking Terry Funk stories and just him just being the anyway.
Yeah. I wanted you on the show tonight because for one thing, I haven't done a Music Is Life podcast in a while since I had the great Gus G of Firewind and formerly of Ozzy Osbourne on the show. And you and I have been talking about doing this episode for a long time. We are going to actually listen to the Buddy Rich tapes.
Oh boy.
And we mentioned this back when we first did a podcast together on the show like 2 years ago, where we were talking about Buddy Rich and his opinion on country music. And look, I mean, I'm not going to knock the man's contributions to music. I'm not going to insult his playing, but man, what a wackadoo.
I think I'm more of a personal flatulent sniffer.
That's a good way to put it. But before we get into that, we're going to discuss a subject that James and I love talking about, and that is pro wrestling, especially old school wrestling. I have to put over our friend Eric Adams because they just had a successful show on September 9th at Das Barbecue, where Teddy Long, Eric Bischoff, and
Nick Patrick.
Well, no, I know. Well, Nick Patrick owns the company. Nick Patrick, the former.
You had Eric Bischoff. You had Teddy Long come there. You had half of the Rock and Roll Express.
That's Robert Gibson. That's who it was. Thank you for correcting me on that. You know, I'm very honored that Nick Patrick and Eric Adams wanted me and Wayne Noon from Ratside Review, also my bandmate in Severed Angel, to do Eric Bischoff's entrance music, which, from what Eric told me, he did not put over when he was out there. But then behind the scenes, he told Eric, that was pretty good, the way you mixed my NWO theme and, you know, the WWE theme. And I was like, he put it over? I'm like, wow, I was really wrong about this Eric Bischoff guy. Okay.
Well, we can't trust everything that came out of the archbishop of Talentberry there. We can't take all that what he said with a grain of salt there. So,
yes,
I mean, Eric Bischoff has his warts, but so does everybody in the wrestling business back in those days.
Look, let's just remind ourselves, wrestling started from the old carny circuit. So to succeed in wrestling, you had to be a carny. And there's nobody more carny than some of these old codgers from the 80s and 90s who just won't go away.
Hey, but you know what? I will still.
God, you took the wrong guy. You shouldn't have taken Terry.
Oh, yes. You know, and like I joke, because Eric Adams also, when he does his independent wrestling, he sometimes has to wrestle Chick Donovan, who somehow magically is still wrestling at the age of like 80.
Wow. But congratulations to Deep South Wrestling and Nick Patrick and Eric Adams for a great show at Das Barbecue in Atlanta, Georgia. I can't wait to see the footage.
Well, definitely watch them on YouTube. They actually do some really good stuff there. And it's not like what you would expect from an independent wrestling. AKA there's not all the leg slaps in the world.
Well, that's kind of what I like about Deep South Wrestling. And first of all, we need to let the audience know, we're not talking about IWA Deep South. We have nothing but disdain for Kevin Brannon, yes, that POS, and, you know, his stupid Saw death matches and him literally putting the quote unquote wrestlers in clear and present danger with these dumbass matches that he makes them work for, for these stupid Carnage Cup things where they're wrestling in front of like 20 people, like killing themselves. It's insane. And Necro Butcher.
And this is coming from somebody who is a deathmatch fan of Blue. When you're saying this, that's a bridge too far, because for me, I'm not a big fan of it. But
well, here's the thing. Do I like deathmatches? Yes. Do I like them when it's the entire card? No. I believe that a deathmatch should be used to end a feud, because I think it's ridiculous when people are constantly breaking light tubes over each other. There's the fear of mercury poisoning in the bloodstream, regardless if the cuts are superficial or not, because they don't go deep. But the reason why it looks like it's a lot is because, the glass breaks into little pieces, protruding, areas of the body. But it's like, okay, so they're minor cuts, but the gaseous fumes that come from them, the mercury, that's not good. And I'm sorry, but no wrestler should ever have to use pigeon spikes as a gimmick. And I remember in GCW when Danny D'Amato was co-booking along with Brett Lauderdale, there was a match, and I love Schlack because he's entertaining, but him and the late Marcus Crane, they did a match where pigeon spikes were used for the gimmick. That's just stupid. Yeah. What if that, impacted your lung or your kidney? It's like, is it worth the $50 and a hot dog and a handshake?
Exactly. And that's what, for me, I'm like, I don't want to watch that. I mean, now I'll admit, it's the funniest part about me. I hate watching somebody get stabbed after the stab and everything. Once the blood's out, okay, let's go. I'm able to, patch up and everything, but watching them actually get stabbed and impaled, that's where I get the heebie-jeebies from. Like, I think that's also the reason why, like, I I never have had the want to watch that as a human. I remember watching one when Wrestle Circus was going on, and like, you know, it was an all ages show, but hey, this was a Masada match. So like,
and Space Monkey brought the kids into the back,
took the kids out of there. Exactly. They got the kids out of there to freaking, so that they could do what they needed to do. And then, you know, everything was good.
I did ask him about that, and he said, oh yeah, I looked around and I saw that all the kids were gone. I was like, hey, where did everybody go? And I think the only thing he did in that match was just the skewers.
Yeah, the skewers, yeah.
Which,
but still.
But no, true. But, you know, now AEW does it. As we saw in All In of London.
There's a lot of things that AEW does that they shouldn't do, okay?
I'm not going to disagree with that statement. You know, when AEW first came onto the scene, I was kind of hoping that it would be sort of like a better WCW than what we ended with. And don't get me wrong, I love wrestlers like MJF. I love Chris Jericho. Yes, I'm still a Jericho fan.
Yeah. I mean, he still puts on good matches. There are, so it's the same thing with me. Like I understand your point. There are good wrestlers there that I want to watch,
mm-hmm.
but the product on in full, like the whole show itself, I could rather not watch that.
James Cornette has definitely had his opinion on it.
Unfortunately, I mean, I understand, take his opinion with a grain of salt. You know, he has not ran successful, you know, organizations and, you know, people's opinions and everything like that.
See, I disagree with that. I disagree with that because I thought Smoky Mountain Wrestling, you know, it being a regional promotion, was a very good alternative to Extreme Championship Wrestling.
I agree, but a lot of people, you know, make fun of it because it only lasted 4 years, but
yeah, well, that's how long the original XPW lasted.
Exactly.
But that's back now, but people,
you know, they want to find something to bash because they can't bash the logic. And that's always what I've had a problem with it is and he makes some good points. I agree with some of his points. I disagree with some of his points, but mm-hmm. the lack of quality control really hurts that product. And you know, and I know we're going to talk about this but everything, but the whole situation with CM Punk and the whole, you know, executive vice president situations, that should have never have happened. It's not just that it happened, it was how it was handled, and everything was just so unprofessional.
That's a PR nightmare. I can't say that they haven't recovered from it, but you know, it's still talk on a lot of, you know, wrestling fans, their social media. Yeah. And, you know, there's always something on YouTube popping up every hour about it with someone giving their opinion. I mean, I don't know what happened. I'm not going to pretend like I know what happened. All I heard was that it was an issue that occurred between him and Jack Perry, where Jack Perry wanted, you know, Jungle Boy wanted to use glass in the match.
A real glass,
which does not make any sense when you are on a platform that's broadcasted internationally.
Exactly.
Like AEW. Now I'm going to open up a can of worms. I keep thinking back to the whole Vince Russo crash TV type mentality. I'd rather just call it crash and burn TV, because mm-hmm. there's a reason why wrestlers, even though they bled a lot, you know, in the 70s and the 80s, when you still had the territories, they still had long careers.
Yes.
Because there's a psychology within the ring that doesn't require you to use real glass. You could give the illusion that you're using real glass. I mean, you could just get sugar glass. And you know, for someone who does high-risk maneuvers, why would you want to risk causing any kind of like bodily injury to yourself like that?
Yeah. And that's where, you know, I that's where I side with, you know, with Phil or CM Punk or however you want to call his name right now, that, you know, they probably brought him in to say, hey, you know, clean this up a little bit. You know, the people are running a little bit too crazy, and we need somebody to teach these young kids how to stay, you know, healthy, because they're running through people and they didn't have champions. And, you know, he hears someone go, "Hey, I want to try this," and he goes, "Well, that's stupid. Why would you want to do that? Mm-hmm. Why would you want to hurt yourself like that? Why do you want to use real glass?" And instead of taking that as going, "Oh, maybe he's looking out for me," you go on pay-per-view in the middle of 70,000 people and call him out, and then be shocked and appalled when somebody gets in your face about it.
Phil Brooks is a very polarizing person.
Absolutely.
In the 100%. World of wrestling, you either love CM Punk or you hate Phil Brooks.
Yeah,
it's one of those situations. There are points, I guess, where I thought he was the best wrestler on the indies, especially like if you watch his old footage from IWA Mid-South.
Yeah,
where he's completely generating heat from the audience without even trying.
Well, that's because that was him being himself. But yes,
but I loved watching it.
Yes.
And the situation that happened in Ring of Honor, where, apparently he got into a fight with Teddy Hart.
Yeah.
Honestly, if Teddy Hart had been put in a coffin after that situation would have happened, I would have personally gone up to Phil Brooks and say, "Thank you," because I can't stand Teddy Hart.
Honestly, I hate to say this, but with some of the stuff, it's kind of shown that, hey, if he has a problem with you to that bad, he wants to fight you, that might be a you problem,
Yeah.
There's a difference between yelling, "Yo, what the fuck," or something like that, when he says something off kilter, and, going up there, just saying, and confronting him with it, with words, not physically confront him, and actually want, and having to get to fisticuffs.
Well, the big thing, I guess, now is that apparently the scuttlebutt around the internet, Marks, is that this is supposedly him making his way back to the land of the Titans.
I don't see it.
I take that with a grain of salt.
Yeah. I don't think he goes back to that. I think he was literally really trying to have a place where he could do his own creative shit, because he thinks he's another one who thinks that, his farts don't stink. And, he wanted to do his own thing and did not want the meddling of Titan Towers. I feel like even with the new name and everything like that and the new ownership, you're still going to have those influences from those people that he had very creative differences with.
Yeah. Speaking of carnies of the old school. Yeah. Who saw that coming with Vince McMahon doing a complete sell to UFC and this stuff happening? I did not see this coming.
The funniest thing about it is that, remember who Entourage's RE Gold is based off of?
Jeremy Piven's character.
Yes.
No, who? No.
Yes. It's based off the guy who owns Endeavor.
Are you serious? Yes. I was not aware of that.
Yes, it's RE Gold's company that bought both UFC and WWE.
So, like, Dana White has no say over UFC anymore?
Dana White's the president of the UFC, just like Vince McMahon's the president of the WWE.
And they both have a parent umbrella company.
They both have the parent, which is RE fucking Gold.
Wow. Well, I'm not going to ever deny Vince's contributions to the world of professional wrestling, but there were a lot of bad calls on his end. And it's funny. Like, I think of the Brawl for All, how that was Vince Russo's idea to see who the toughest guy was amongst eight people, all because he wanted to get back at Bradshaw. So he literally put these eight guys in the ring to fight each other and see who the toughest was. And
meanwhile, not having two of the legitimately toughest guys participate in this, because they just said, "Why would we do this? This is stupid."
Right.
And you had Dan the Beast Severn and Ken Shamrock in the locker room.
And Bart Gunn won it. And, yay, accolades and whatever. But then it's like, okay, what do we do with him now?
Yeah.
Which goes to show you, realism, when it takes place within storylines, is one thing. When it takes place in what they broadcast, this is why professional wrestling needs to be predetermined.
Yeah.
Because look at what happened.
Yeah.
Did Steve Williams ever really recuperate from what happened. His career didn't. And, you know, even though I do love the Major League Wrestling War Games where, you know, he partook in it as part of Terry Funk's team,
and
he
had to go back and to beating, Japan and to beating up a young Giovanni Jabroni while at it in MLW.
Yes, Giovanni Jabroni. That's the greatest name ever.
I don't know. I don't know if he came up with that or who came up with that, but yes.
I want to give Eric Adams the credit that he came up with that. In fact, when I was looking for, because I was looking for him on Cage Match, and I'm like, he's only on a handful of things. And then I went to the second MLW card, and it said Giovanni Jabroni. I'm like, no. I'm like, Eric, you did not change your name to Giovanni Jabroni.
Yes, and he said,
yes, he did.
There he is, getting picked up for the freaking, for the backdrop driver.
So, listen, though, if you see Eric Adams in Atlanta, don't ever call him Giovanni Jabroni, because you will get stretched.
I mean, do, and please videotape it. I for one, will be thoroughly entertained.
There you go.
I mean, I'll for one be. There's going to be a handful. There's going to be a small collective of about 100 people in Atlanta that will be watching that with absolute glee when all of it goes down.
But the point I was trying to make was that, you know, Brawl for All proved why everything that happens within professional wrestling needs to be, you know, booked. You know, you need a booker for that, which, you know, it's obvious Vince Russo took that idea and just, you know, threw it out with the baby with the bathwater. But, you know, there also come times where, and Kevin Sullivan, I know you had him when you had Beyond Bushido on the show. You know, he mentioned nobody's wrong, nobody's right in wrestling. It's just a matter of, you know, testing the waters to see, you know, how far an angle could go. Well, Vince did have some bad angles. You know, not all of them were gold mines.
Yep.
You know, I mean, I don't understand his fascination with poop jokes.
It's such good shit.
Or telling Roman Reigns to say suffer and suck. Like, what the hell?
I mean, for one was thoroughly, you know, I enjoyed that part, but I know everyone was not enjoying that. I feel like Vince wanted to have Roman Reigns be the John Cena and didn't realize he had a new rock on his hands until he let Roman Reigns go heel and finally pull the trigger on that, and then saw how much better he was as a heel, that he could do more of it.
Yeah, because I have nothing against Roman Reigns as a performer or as a talent, but it's part of the reason why I stopped watching in 2016. I was happy when Bryan Danielson won the championship. I was even happy when CM Punk won the championship. Granted, they put Bryan Danielson, the American Dragon. You know, they put him in more main event matches than CM Punk ever got, which I thought was ridiculous. You know, again, just bad booking on WWE's end. I just felt like Roman Reigns was just getting shoved down our throats. And I was just like, you want me to like the guy? You're forcing me to like the guy. You can't force me to like someone that I feel has no character development, which, you know, I'm sorry, but when there were two major wrestling leagues, you had that. You had character development.
Yeah, out of necessity.
Correct. You know, and you as the viewer had the option to choose between one or the other.
Exactly. And, you know, and I'll give them a lot more credit with developing and everything. I feel like with NXT turning into what it did. Now, I know Roman Reigns, they said, oh, he's part of that. I don't think he had as much development as they do nowadays, because you got some of them come out of there. They're fully, you know, fully baked, ready to go. Just go straight to the main roster and thrive. Biggest one for me, obviously, I'm going to be biased here, is from Knoxville, and Bianca Belair just comes out 100%. She knows what she's doing, and she could be the face of the company.
Mm-hmm.
And they grabbed her straight from college and brought her up with a little help.
Not wrong with that at all. But I wish I could say that I know what's been going on with the product to like really have an opinion. I know that if someone mentions certain wrestlers, I get happy to know that they're still working. Like, I'm happy that Finn Balor is still wrestling. Even though she's not a good slam poet, I still love Becky Lynch. You
know? Yeah. I mean,
that's been making the rounds.
Yes, it has been. I'm a huge fan of some of the like I love that Dominic Mysterio has gotten thermonuclear heat with every single Latino person in the world by turning on his family for one woman.
Oh, Rhea Ripley?
Yes.
I would turn on my family for Rhea Ripley, so I don't blame him.
Funny part is they found her and her fiance or husband at a Aussie football game when they were on break down in Australia.
Oh yeah, I heard about that.
The camera just panning past them, and you could just see Rhea just go, "Oh shit, here comes the freaking camera," and her fiance just like, "Oh okay, I'm gonna stand here because he's an AAW now, he's able to just stand there and just let the chaos pass right by him." She's like, "Crap, I gotta be on TV."
I wonder how they make that work when it's like your significant other is wrestling for the other league.
It's called you're just getting paid. Not,
Yeah, I know, but it's like, touring schedules, I'm sure. Like, because WWE wrestlers still go, I think, 4 to 5 days a week.
I mean, most of them have met their significant other in the WWE, so they kind of understand what's going on. I mean, look at Zelina Vega and Aleister Black. Doing the same thing.
Yeah. There was one interesting program that I did watch, and I know it's been out for a while, but I finally got around to watching the A&E biography on Macho Man Randy Savage.
Okay.
And have you seen it by any chance?
No, I haven't.
Okay. So, spoiler alert, the craziest thing about that episode was when they interviewed Ricky the Dragon Steamboat, and they were talking about their WrestleMania 3 match.
Okay.
Did you know that that entire match was planned out ahead of time by Macho Man on notepad and pen, talking over with Ricky? All right, this is what we're going to do here. And then we're going to do this. And then, they literally numbered every move and memorized every move and went out there and put on what people say to this day is the greatest WrestleMania match ever.
From our wrestling sources, that was every single Macho Man match. Macho hated doing things on the fly.
He never called a move in the ring?
He hated calling moves in the ring.
Really? That's funny. That's completely the opposite of the Ricky Morton school of thought.
And also, Ricky the Dragon Steamboat is from that school. He likes to call everything in the ring. So it shows how good those two were together. They were able to work through those two differences and paint a Rembrandt painting in the middle of the ring.
Yeah, I mean,
it's still something that I can sit down, watch, and enjoy. I mean, it is like the 98 or 97 All Japan Tag Tournament when it had like everybody in it.
I never really got to see any All Japan matches. I saw more FMW than All Japan.
That's the one with Doug Furness and the Can Am Express in there. Mm-hmm. And they had the Funks in there, they had everybody. So that's why I love those tournaments, because it was just a who's who of wrestling.
I'm assuming Stan Hansen was part of it.
Of course, it's All Japan. That means Stan Hansen's there, Larry and somebody.
I've gotten a kick of watching his old promos just because they are so entertaining. Obviously, his role is is of a Texas redneck, A&M, yes. The funk school, chewing tobacco while the freaking spit's coming out of his mouth.
You make me sick!
From what I heard, he was stiff in the ring because he couldn't see.
He was blind as a bat, 100%. Your job was to let it hit. He was throwing it. Your job was to make it land easy.
Oh, my goodness. I'll never forget Paulie's words in his induction video, his Hall of Fame induction video, where he says Stan Hansen was the man that broke the neck of Bruno Sammartino.
Yeah.
And, it's funny watching Stan's interviews, and he said, "I felt so bad about that. I apologize." I'm like, wait a minute, is this the same guy?
I always think of Stan Hansen when he broke Vader's eye.
Oh, yeah. And that video has been making the rounds a lot on YouTube.
It always does. My thing is, we never got to see the best version of Vader because that was UWFI. and watching him and freaking Gary Albright just do big hoss shit, just in the middle of a ring, just big behemoths beating the god out of each other in a shoot in a shoot fight.
Mm-hmm. Well, but every Stan Hansen match was a shoot fight.
I mean, it turned into them. It got saucy fast. Okay, these things happen. All right,
but the Japanese love that though.
Oh, and also like it shows like that's their big blow offs are those matches where they're going all out like that. You know, people forget, they think King's Road was a style you did Monday through Friday. No, mm-hmm. King's Road was for the big matches.
Mm.
You know.
Do you think it's safe to say that Stan Hansen is the father of strong style?
No, because I still think that's Inoki.
You said that it's Inoki. Okay, fair enough.
I still think that's Inoki. I feel like though he is the continuation of King's Road when guys like Kobashi and Misawa and everybody were starting to build up. He was that driving force to perpetuate it from Baba into the pillars.
Mm. All right, good, fair enough. Another program that I've finally caught up on all the episodes of is Dark Side of the Ring, which, you know, you hear a lot of the, I'm going to use a word again because I think it's a funny word, the scuttlebutt amongst wrestling personalities who are now podcasters.
Oh, boy.
A lot of them, that show shouldn't exist because it exposes the business too much. I'm like, yeah, but granted, there are a lot of fans such as James and me,
yeah,
who respect the business and we respect the art form of professional wrestling. You know, I'll even give credit to MJF for, you know, keeping kayfabe alive and, you know, keeping his character alive. Like if people recognize him on the streets,
yeah,
you know, but is kayfabe really as valid today as it was then? I don't know. To fans like us, we keep it alive because we're smart to it.
We want to believe still. We like to suspend our belief.
It's still real to us, damn it.
It's still real to us, damn it. However, I'm sorry to those people who also make podcasts and everything. It wasn't anybody's fault but yourselves when you decided to pin somebody in an airplane with wearing nothing but an open robe and a smile. You know, so once again, I it's hard to find sympathy. You can't be calling kayfabe when you're doing, you know, sex creep stuff. I'm sorry. I draw the line at that. You know,
see, I wasn't even mentioning him. I think it was actually Disco Inferno that said that.
You really never think mind. I care what Disco Inferno says?
No.
All right.
But I agree with your point. There is one really good wrestling podcast that's out there that I do watch on a consistent basis. Wrestling Shoot Interviews with that British guy. I think his name is David. Have you watched those?
No, I haven't.
Okay, WSI, you can find them on YouTube. He's really good. Like, he asks some great questions. He's had Ricky Morton. He's had Dutch Mantel. Actually, he does spinoff podcasts with Dutch Mantel, and he just started one with Shane Douglas. Okay. And he asks some really good questions. And unlike a certain other person that has an ad-free shows thing, although I do like his content, he doesn't interrupt the guests.
Yeah, it's true.
I like Conrad Thompson. Don't get me wrong, but
Conrad.
I don't think he's the worst podcast host.
He's not, but he's also not the best in the world there that gets paid money to do this stuff. But, you know, I feel like, you know, a lot of people, you know, unless you dig into who Conrad Thompson is, you wouldn't know, oh, hey, by the way, you know, he married one of Ric Flair's daughters.
Kayfabe is not alive. Anyway.
No, we're not going to kayfabe that. Forget that. No.
This is true. He is an honor. He is a Flair in-law.
He is a Flair in-law. So, I mean, like, I feel like that's where, like, I get, like, okay, I understand you got a job to do and everything like that, but you can't be trying to you can't be trying to work me while knowing that also is there as well. I mean, I can suspend my disbelief a little bit. I can't go that far.
I understand, but I do think that this guy, and again, I got his name. Oh no, it's James. His name is James. James from Wrestling Shoot Interviews.
Okay.
He does a great job, and you know, he doesn't ask like the typical BS questions. Like, I mean, he really gets into like their careers, and you can tell he didn't get his research from Wikipedia. You know what I mean? Like, he actually does his research. So,
I feel for it, because, like, I mean, you could get some really good stories from Dutch. Dutch was a really smart guy that was in a very, it was there at a really weird time in Memphis wrestling. The line he always made of when Jerry was going to the WWE, going like, oh, hey, boys, you know, we got to get off the gas now. You know, they're drug testing us. And Dutch just pops up and goes, we can't even afford performance enhancing food.
That's a good one. Oh my goodness.
You know, so I mean, like, you know, what do you expect from a man like that had the gall to name himself after one of the more famous heels in wrestling in the early days?
I guess because, you know, I always knew Memphis was a very big territory for professional wrestling, especially in the days when it was still Continental. Prior to it becoming USWA, like, you know, you knew the guys, I guess, were making a living back then. But then in the 90s, when it went USWA, and like, you wonder, how did they make a living? It was different when you were getting a guaranteed contract from WCW. And when you were making, you know, money per booking at WWE. You know, and obviously them being a national promotion, they paid more than any regional one did at that time. But I just wonder, how did the guys manage to like make a living full time wrestling in either Memphis or Smoky Mountain or even early ECW? I'm sure
I mean, the flop house was a thing. So, I mean, there was, you know, like, you know, communal living and at that time, Jefferson City, Tennessee was, you know, not as expensive as it is today. It's still not very expensive, the cost of living in that area where they were based out of.
Wait till more New Yorkers move in.
hey, yeah, thanks guys. Yeah, we're full. Hey, by the way, PSA, Nashville's full, so can you guys please stop going there? For the love of God, please stop coming to Nashville. They're full.
Well, I'm still here in Long Island, so you know,
I say this tongue in cheek as a person who's staring down the barrel of moving to Middle Tennessee. So
I gotcha. But anyways, having watched all the Dark Side of the Ring episodes, I've come to one sentence statements about how I feel about certain episodes or certain personalities that they discussed. So I'll begin with David Schultz. He's owed an apology.
He's owed more than apology.
He's owed restitution.
Restitution. And also, I love that man transitioned from the world of professional wrestling and being
bounty
successful to being successful as a bounty hunter.
And being on Morton Downey Jr. twice. Calling out Thunderbolt Patterson, which was hilarious.
The better one was when Dennis Carluzzo calling a 2-bit jobber on that show.
Oh, it was that guy Jim something who apparently said that he was he was propositioned by Jim Barnett.
Yes.
Which I'm sorry, everyone back then was propositioned by Jim Barnett.
My boy.
And I don't condone it, but you could have said no. If you did said yes.
There is this word no, and he would understand. He wasn't going to punish you for saying no.
Because Tommy Rich said no.
Yeah.
And he still to this day says, no, I was not propositioned by Jim Barnett. Ric Flair. If Ole hates him, there's a reason why.
Well, in Rick's defense, Ole hates a lot of people.
No, but he really hated Ric Flair.
Well, Lee there's Anderson a reason. Really, I agree, and he know, he's completely justified on that one. But Ole does hate everybody equally.
Yes, but
except he hates people some more.
He literally put the belt on Flair to keep him out of wrestling in his territory.
That's great. That's beautiful. That's petty on another level.
Did I cut you off with David Schultz? Was there anything else you wanted to say to that?
No, David Schultz, yeah, he's owed an apology and everything. However, I enjoy that he will still sell your book if you send to him $20 in a mail.
In the mail?
Yes.
Hasn't he heard of Venmo or PayPal or Zelle?
He lives in the middle of nowhere in Tennessee. He does not have internet. He barely has a phone.
Well, I'd get it. All right. Hulk Hogan. His recent interviews show he's still a dirty carny. And that's really all I could say about that. Why would you go out and say that the day, like a couple of days after you beat Andre the Giant at WrestleMania 3, that he died? Why would you go around telling people still to this day that you auditioned for Metallica when Lars Ulrich said, I never met you?
Look, I enjoy that he loves working in a crowd and fully believes the gimmick that he has created the last 60 years of his life.
So you think he knowingly is saying these lies just to stay relevant?
I am not going to either confirm nor deny. I don't know if he believes his own gimmick that much nowadays, or is it just he is working everybody at all times?
Well, I won't be going to Hulk's Beach Shop in Florida anytime soon. I can tell you that.
Tell that for yourself.
I sold my Hulk Hogan wrestling buddy back in 2010 on eBay. I think I got $40 for it. I'm surprised I got that much. Because now I don't think I'd get anything for it.
Yeah. Someone's already telling me I need to go to Clearwater when I visit Florida again.
Herb Abrams. More credibility than Vince Russo.
Look, cocaine's a hell of a drug, and he did a lot of it.
A lot of it.
Still one of the greatest deaths in wrestling history.
Oh, please tell the story.
Oh, of being
barricading Vaseline with prostitutes,
barricading himself inside of a office after the cops have showed up. With all I could say is a metric ton of cocaine and hookers, and decides this is where I'm going to go out in a blaze of glory, lubed up on Vaseline, naked with cowboy boots on after doing how much of the cocaine possible. I think Cocaine Bear was the only one who took more cocaine at that time than Herbo Turbo did. Yeah, that was his nickname too, is Herbo Turbo. And then going out the window in a blaze of glory, all Vaseline'd up like the greased up deaf guy, high on the Colombian marching powder.
And remember, kids, don't forget your Herbie cookies.
And don't forget your Herbie cookies. Absolutely. Look, Jim Brunzel still probably has a few of those lying around.
They're probably stale as hell right now.
I would hope so. They're 40 years old.
35, but who's counting? Vince Russo. Again, Brawl for All was just stupid.
Dumb.
And again, Vince Russo. Knows nothing. And look, I'm a fan, okay? And I am not a subject matter expert. I'm just a fan who remembers what it was like growing up, saw the transition of where it was going, and I could appreciate companies like Deep South Wrestling for doing what they do now, because to me, that continues on. I think those kids, those wrestlers in Deep South Wrestling, when they... should they go on to greener pastures with WWE or AEW or Japan, that people will know that that's good stock, you know?
Exactly. Like,
yeah, because they respect the business. But I can honestly say, with everything Vince Russo said in his episodes of Dark Side of the Ring and everything he continues to say to this day, that he hates professional wrestling. He said he despises it. You know, he hated all the wrestling stuff, but meanwhile, if it wasn't for the wrestling, you wouldn't have wrestling as we know it, because, you know, for McMahon to have bought out all those regional territories, there had to have been something good there in the first place. He also was the guy that made titles meaningless, and if you watch those episodes of Nitro where the belts are just going back and forth, David Arquette, that's all I need to say.
So,
and like I said, Crash TV should just be Crash and Burn TV. Yeah. But anyways, go ahead.
My only answer to that whole thing is Vince Russo makes me embarrassed to be a Giants fan.
Vince Russo makes me glad I don't watch sports.
It's just him and that's the only connection me and him have is that we love the San Francisco Giants, and I'm embarrassed that he likes the San Francisco Giants. Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, I grew up loving the Yankees, you know, number 23, Don Mattingly. That was my guy. To see him in a Barry Bonds jersey, I was like, you shouldn't be wearing that. I guess the only thing that I could see in response to him when he says it's just wrestling, that it doesn't matter, my response is because we want wrestlers to have successful careers where most of them can escape without injury and to not watch them retire early because of crash TV. You know, I mean,
my biggest takeaway from that episode is that after he says that, then you have Jim Cornette literally almost in tears, shaking from anger about that, showing his passion for what wrestling was. And, you know, the whole joke of him and Bobby Fulton, you know, what Dutch and Jerry Lawler or Jerry Lawler and Jerry Jarrett would say was like, if you broke their heads open, little wrestling rings would fall out. Whereas if Terry Taylor broke his head open, you know, a certain female anatomy would be falling out of his head.
The older I get, the more I understand Jim Cornette. You know, because it was his livelihood. Prime example of when Impact fans got it right was when they yelled "Fire Russo" during the Sting Abyss coffin match.
Oh my God! That entire fever dream of TNA during that time and the criminal underutilizing of talent still baffles me to this day.
TNA, I'm not saying they could have beaten WWE.
No,
but they were such a good alternative because of guys like Christopher Daniels, Frankie Kazarian, Chris Sabin, Alex Shelley, Sanjay Dutt. You had good wrestlers. And, you know, they could have done Flippy, but they could have also done a real good story in the ring.
So I enjoyed how they would do the thing of where they'd get everybody worked up with all the Flippity stuff at the beginning, do the X Division stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the end, that's when you started doing the meet when you had Angle. Now, granted, it was Perk Angle, still one of the best angles ever out there, doing his feud with like AJ Styles and all that stuff. And AJ Styles transitioning from the undercard, aka the X Division, into being a full-time wrestler, the main event wrestler. You know, and it turned into what, you know, it just watching what Russo did to it kind of ruined it. Cause I mean, like, you had such good tag team too. You had LAX, you had, you know, the Dudleys still at their peak. They're going strong. You had the Machine Guns that were able to bring in something different. You had, you know, you had these different tag teams that were able to come in and do things. You had America's Most Wanted or Beer Money, which I think was a better combination. Go in there and actually put on classic matches and putting on what you would consider wrestling. But then all of a sudden here came the reverse battle royals and all this other hoo-ha crap that just kind of took the piss out of it.
You know, another thing that just killed me was that I can never see Jeff Jarrett in the role of like a Ric Flair, you know, where he was the company's top heel. When you're the guy who owns the company and you're making yourself a top heel, no.
That would be no good.
No good.
No good. No good.
There's a reason why Kevin Sullivan never gave himself a title when he was booking for WCW.
Yeah.
Because he knew that if he did that, he'd be screwed.
Exactly.
And that's what happened to Jeff Jarrett, I think.
Well, and also, I mean, and this is not to defend him because he's indefensible. I don't know where that other top heel could have been.
Well, trying to think, who else did you have
outside of having a heel monster like Abyss?
Right, Monty Brown. Enough character there.
No,
I thought.
No, the Alpha Male was not that. He was a great mid-card guy.
Yeah, and then he went to WWE CW for like a minute, and then it was like, where'd he go?
Yeah, and then he got injured again, and he was gone.
Yeah, no, I guess there really were no formidable heels.
No, I mean, like, they were trying things. They were trying to make Sting heel, which just didn't work.
Sting can never work as a heel.
Can never be heel, ever.
Even when they tried to make him a heel, he still got cheered.
Exactly. You know, Kurt Angle could be a heel, but then there's just times when you can't deny what he's doing in there and you just can't help but cheer for him, you know.
Exactly. And the one Impact show that I saw live, the main event was AJ Styles versus Kurt Angle. And this is back in February 2008. They put on a great match.
Of course they did. They were both professionals and both in peak physical condition.
Mm-hmm.
I understand the issue. The problem was that they could never fill up a top heel that could be that guy. Did they even want to is also a debate we can have.
Well, I was a fan of the main event Mafia. I thought they were good heels.
Of course they were, because he had Scott Steiner yelling, "He's fat," to Samoa Joe.
Oh, that's true.
He's fat.
And let's not forget that great mathematical equation promo that he did.
Look, and also respect for MJF for attempting the same thing on live television.
Moving right along. British Bulldogs. You know, I used to love them. I really did.
Never got to see them.
Well, I lost respect for them after I found out that they would give Matilda, their British Bulldog, X-Lax. And I think this might have been Dynamite Kids doing.
This was definitely Dynamite Kids doing.
Yeah, and you know, and the X-Lax would, of course, cause stomach issues to poor Matilda the Bulldog, which would then cause to, well, you know, the drizzling shits, as Oli would call it.
Yes.
And, you know, they would use it to rib the other wrestlers. I'm glad Jacques Rougeau knocked him out. I'm glad he knocked out Dynamite Kid, because after watching his episode, and, you know, and again, I feel bad about how things ended for him. But at the same time, as I'm watching this and I, you know, him pulling a gun on his wife, what a dick.
I hate to say this, and you know, I know this is probably not the nicest thing to say. I believe that he had that shit coming. When you treat people like garbage for so long, and then you're shocked and appalled when all that happens when you're old and dying in a wheelchair. Well, you've kind of brought all this stuff on your own. This is the garden that you've tended to. I have less sympathy for Dynamite Kid. I feel terrible for Davey Boy. The whole accident with WCW and everything,
mm-hmm.
which was just pure stupidity, 100% unadulterated to stupidity of how that happened. That's where I remember him from. I remember just watching Davey Boy. I never got to watch the British Bulldogs themselves or the Hart Foundation themselves. I've had to watch them on video. So I never got to actually feel it in real time.
Well, knowing what we know about Stu Hart, which, you know, he was a bit of a hard ass. Do we blame Dynamite Kid's shortcomings because of possibly a Napoleonic complex or environment for being raised in the Hart dungeon?
I did not hear anything bad about Brett, Owen, Davey Boy, or Jim Neidhart outside of substance issues of Davey and Jim Neidhart. I've not heard a lot of negative stuff from them, but yet magically the only one I have heard, and not even heard bad stuff about Brian Pillman. None of them. It's just been one person.
It's funny that you mentioned Brian Pillman, because that incident that occurred where not his ex-wife, but the woman Rochelle that he was with prior to being with Melanie, where she took her own life, and Brian felt responsible for that because he wanted full custody of his kids. That unfortunately put Brian Pillman in a dark light for me.
It does, but outside of certain things, I have not seen the constant stories of assholery that the Dynamite Kid did. Well, every other person who went through the Hart dungeon doesn't seem to have pulled through the most part. Obviously, there's tragic circumstances in most of them. I don't see it. And also,
Lance Storm is doing great.
Lance Storm's doing great. Exactly. I mean, and say what you want with about his political views or anything like that, but Jericho's doing great, and he was one of the last ones in that.
Magnum TA. Could he have been a bigger superstar than Hogan if he didn't have his accident?
No.
Why?
So I've watched Magnum TA and all that stuff. I never got the camera presence and the charisma that Hulk Hogan had with Magnum TA. I saw the great body, the great promo, you know, and everything packaged in there, but he was the black hole of charisma, in my opinion.
No charisma at all.
It's like his promos and everything. His most notable promos I remember is with him and Dusty Rhodes, and Dusty's eating the camera alive.
Well, that's what he did best.
Yes.
Because he could, because he was Dusty.
Yes. But still, that's just my, that's my opinion with the whole thing.
Well, I mean, I definitely the best I quit match ever in history, okay. In my opinion, with him and Tully Blanchard. Oddly enough, he'd end up marrying Tully Blanchard's shoot wife later on.
Oh, boy. Have I heard some stories about that?
That might be for a different episode.
That's a different episode for a different time. Now, granted, that woman had to deal with Tully Blanchard when Tully Blanchard was in full Blanchard mode. So
that can mean a multitude of things.
Oh, and it does.
Oh, great. Mike Graham, sad ending, incredibly sad ending. His father's unaliving, his son's unaliving, and his own unaliving, and all the praise in the world to his daughter for doing good stuff with outreach programs and stuff like that. But, you know, I watched some of his shoot interviews, and his whole never drew a dime shtick. And he was talking about what he called the vanilla midgets, meaning Eddie Guerrero, Chris Benoit. And, you know, granted, we're not condoning anything Benoit did in 2007. But at the time, before he did all that stuff,
yeah,
I loved watching him, you know. I mean, if it wasn't for those guys and Saturn, I really didn't have much reason to watch WCW. I mean, those were the guys that made me want to watch it and invest in it because they had good matches. Mm-hmm. So when he's saying that he got the minute by minute ratings, how, number one, how is that possible when Arbitron and
Nielsen,
right, thank you, they don't do it minute by minute. So what the hell is he talking about?
Still don't do it because he's making stuff up. And I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I don't want to speak ill, but obviously when you start saying that stuff, you're pulling shit out of your ass, and he's full of it.
Yeah, I don't believe that he actually went up to Benoit and told him what he did to Kevin Sullivan, that if that was him, he'd knock him out. I don't believe he really did that.
No. I don't think he had the intestinal fortitude to I'm trying to keep you monetized here. The intestinal fortitude to do that, to confront somebody with a legitimate shoot background like Chris Benoit did.
Yeah, I mean, you know, again, I don't want to speak ill of the dead either, but I mean, I remember he said one time he was asked by Eric Bischoff, like, you know, how we could save money. And he said, cancel the Clash of the Champions because this was back in 94. And he said, and right after that, you know, we had extra money in the bank in 94 because we canceled Clash of the Champions. I'm like, dude, the last Clash of the Champions was in August of 1997, three years later. What the hell are you talking about?
Because he's making stuff up.
So was he notorious for doing that, to put himself over?
I don't know who this person is we're even talking about, but obviously he's trying to do that.
Well, you know who Mike Graham is. He's the son of Eddie Graham and, you know, Florida Championship Wrestling.
I remember Eddie Graham. I don't remember Mike Graham at all.
Okay. Well, for the record, a lot of people don't remember Mike Graham, but he definitely let himself be known. Like, you know, if you watch the Rise and Fall of the WCW DVD, or, you know, and his stuff's on YouTube everywhere, where, you know, he says, this person didn't draw a dime, this person didn't draw. I'm like, motherfucker, you didn't draw a dime.
Yeah. Who the fuck is you?
But again, it's just tragic what happened to his family. You know, I mean,
no. Eddie Graham's stories are the best for how much of a wild man Eddie Graham was.
I heard Adrian Adonis. Why mess with Dan Spivey? Why would you do that? He'll kill you. Waylon Mercy will kill you.
I mean, I was thoroughly entertained,
but. This look, I'm not one of those people who exacerbates the whole toxic masculinity thing. I think you just have assholes within genders.
Yep.
It can't be the reason why guys like Adrian Adonis or Dynamite Kid would do that, because of some kind of built up insecurity or so much testosterone that they were around that they felt the need to, like, you know, exude their manhood by, you know, picking on people. But why pick with Dan Spivey? I look at Dan Spivey and I'm like, oh, he's the wrestling version of Pete Steele. Tall, yeah. And he'd probably kick my ass.
Look, some people like the challenge.
Then play me in Wii Tennis, okay? We don't need to fight, you know?
I mean, there's been times when, you know, I've seen a person like that, especially when I was training, and you just go, I think I can take him. I gotta find this out. I gotta go over there and I gotta see it. I know this doesn't make sense, and I know this is stupid.
Well, he didn't. Anyway, last 2 points. Well, technically 1 point, because we already discussed CM Punk, and my question was why, but we already discussed that.
Yeah.
Final point would be Abdullah the Butcher. The only thing I could say about that episode is Hannibal is an asshole.
Tell us something. Sorry. This just then. Grass is green and water's wet. Hannibal is an asshole. All right. Hannibal's a piece of shit. Sorry, I'm going to be getting you demonetized, but
that's okay, because, you know, James over on Wrestling Shoot Interview said the same thing.
He's a piece of human garbage that has somehow been able to worm his way into some of the most viral moments in wrestling history by just being an absolute terrible person.
That incident alone with the ref, where he uses an equivalent to Kevin Sullivan's golden spike. And I'm like, how do you justify, even when the guy says he's willing to do it hard way? It's like, how many holes did you put in his fucking head?
Exactly.
And he posted a rebuttal to that episode where he justified what happened. I'm like, dude, there's no justification.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. If Lance Storm, who, you know, wrestled in ECW, you know, he used, in one of his matches with Tommy Dreamer, he used the belt buckle on his head. Now, granted, you know, Dreamer did the blade, because, you know, he would blade, but then, like, you know, he gimmicked the belt buckle on the head, and, you know, you'd see the blood coming out, but, you know, you could tell he wasn't putting pressure because he didn't really want to hurt Dreamer. I just don't understand the logic of him literally hard-weighing a guy like that as multiple times as he did.
I once again, he's part of that brain disease of people who think they know what they're doing, but the Dunning-Kruger effect has proven that they don't.
So in other words, the Ricky Morton statement of people come into this business and think they know everything, but they don't know shit.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Or classic Dusty saying, don't do shit you don't know how to do.
Well, you know, I gotta admit, looking at Dusty's forehead, he would go with the grain as opposed to against the grain when it came to blading.
Yeah,
because if you cut yourself, you know, horizontally, it leaves less of a mark than if you go vertically. So
I don't understand the,
because there's some sick foreheads that came out from that era. I'm talking about King Iakea.
There's a lot of them.
Bruiser Brody.
Freaking Abdullah the Butcher at the end of the times. He's still, yeah.
I mean, someone says that he did that to himself.
Yeah, of course he did, probably. It's easier to do it that way. It's easier to hide. It's easier to do sleight of hand going down than it is going sideways. It's really hard to sleight of hand this, or it is easier to sleight of hand that.
But I mean, do you think Abdullah has any, well, Tony Atlas said that, you know, Abdullah should be cleared of any wrongdoing because in our business, you know what you're getting into, you know? Now, if Abdullah was using his own blades on Hannibal, my only question is, why would you do that?
Exactly.
So I guess I put some accountability on him.
I don't, because I just go, okay, if the match is going to call for this and you know you're going to do this, the best way to avoid these accidents happening is sitting down and saying, I don't know how to do this. Either show me or we don't do it. And, you know, I mean, I also love the old Kevin Sullivan story about the chisel in Freedom Hall in Johnson City, Tennessee.
Is this the first time, Wing Kanemura incident?
No. When Kevin Sullivan was a young babyface in the 60s, he was wrestling with Whitey Caldwell in a tag team with the Wright brothers. And the Wrights, they said, "Hey, this is the big cage match. Hey, kid, you're getting color." And he said, "Okay, do I need to do that myself?" They said, and Ron Wright just said, "No, kid, we got yourselves. You're gonna get the chisel tonight. You're gonna get the old chisel."
Oh dear God.
It was like a brass knuckle that had like a little axe pick in the middle of your fist. So that when you came off the ropes, they punch you, it would make color.
How bad was the cut?
No, very small, because it was wrapped in tape, so it only exposed a little spot, so it only go just into the forehead.
Wow.
It was perfect little gimmicking. However, Kevin Sullivan comes off the rope, sees that he's armed with a spike. It gets hit. He sees blood. Jim Cornette makes the greatest line ever in this story when he says, "And then after seeing that, they're wanting to come hit him again with the chisel. Kevin Sullivan pulls out a chain out of his tights," because everybody had a weapon in East Tennessee at the time. And he starts hitting either Ron or Don Wright in the forehead with the fist wrapped chain. And Wright pops up and yells, "All right, kid, lay him in there."
And this is what I mean by people need to know their history.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah.
When it comes to the business.
Oh, the Wrights. So the Wrights were the only reason why Smoky Mountain got on Channel 10.
Oh, really?
At first. Tim Burchett, the current representative of the state of Tennessee, was one of the media people there in East Tennessee. And they were in a meeting trying to get wrestling put on television, and everyone was all heeming and hawing. And then one of them said, "Hey, who do you have on your roster?" And of course, Jim says, "Ron Wright." And everyone just went, "Oh my God, it's Ron Wright." And they started telling the stories. And so they couldn't get him on Channel 10 after a while. So they moved him to Fox 43. And that's where Smoky Mountain stayed till the end.
Now, let me ask you, now, syndicated wrestling, you had NWA Jim Crockett Promotions on Channel 11 in New York. And there were commercials in there for, like, you know, local stuff and, you know, local stores and things like that. And, you know, you had WWF on Channel 5. And, you know, again, that had commercials, but both of them had the promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Yeah.
And then you had ECW, which was essentially an infomercial on MSG Channel. So when you had regional wrestling in Tennessee, like Smoky Mountain, was it an infomercial? Was it syndicated programming? Like, how did it come off?
So for me, the few memories, and this is okay. So I started, my mother moved out here in 96. So I was still living.
Smoky Mountain was already done by then.
Smoky Mountain was almost done.
It was almost done. Okay.
I was still living in Northern Nevada at the time, full time. However, I went to visit my mother in the summer and spend time with her down in East Tennessee. And I remember getting the bunny ears and seeing the Headbangers in Smoky Mountain Wrestling.
Really?
Yes. And it was local. Like, they would do a segment and then they would cut to commercial, and it was the local commercials for the area. I'm talking like a Shoney's commercial and like that ilk, a Ted Russell Ford, most definitely. Commercial, and then it would go straight back into it. I remember that. So my most vivid memory of watching the Headbangers was the jumping headbang that they would do in WWE. They also had a boombox.
I remember the boombox.
Yes, and they would blast the boombox in their defeated foe's face.
Yeah, because that's what metal fans did.
And that's what metal fans did. Hey, remember this was East Tennessee at the time. All right, nobody was playing that devil music there. They were still playing just the normal classic rock stuff.
Which makes me only wonder how much heat the gangsters got when they were there. Because those were some insane promos.
Literally. Parrotsville, Tennessee, outside of Newport. Newport itself is a rough area. Parrotsville is a suburb for this, but just more of the people in the white hoods. One of them,
you know what he's talking about.
One of them literally walked out in plain clothes, walked to Jim Cornette and said, just give us a sign. We'll take care of the gangsters for you.
Are you serious? That is sick.
They were ready to kill them. A 300 or so. So remember, Sonny, Tammy Sitch was there before she went to the WWE.
Yes.
She almost got put. She got carried out of the alleyway into the stands by a 300-pound woman in Barberville, Kentucky, by her hair. Because someone got a hold of her and tried to drag her into the stands to beat the crap out of her.
How did they stop her from doing it?
Some people were there to break it up, but yeah, she did. Yeah, they.
Yeah, because if any time a pull apart was necessary, it was that.
Yeah, I mean it was a big girl. They make them strong up there. But you're talking like they drove like 2.5 hours to Barberville, Kentucky. From Morristown, it's a straight shot on the highway, but it's still a bit of a drive. Get up in the mountains, and then you have to heal it up with a bunch of people who historically have shot at wrestlers,
stabbed wrestlers,
burnt planes down. We're talking the worst of the worst type fans. And Tammy goes out there in her full New Jersey freaking I'm better than you act in the middle of the holler heathens of Kentucky and expected to come out of there unscathed. I'm sorry, that wasn't going to happen.
You know, the funny thing is, like, you know, Jim Cornette makes no bones about his political affiliations, but you know, he really knew how to generate heat from the audience with the talent. Like telling Tammy Sitch, tell him that Hillary Clinton's your hero, or you know, just basically
piss,
telling
the go gangsters, piss white people off.
Yes. And then of course was the OJ promo.
That was literally that's what he told New Jack in Morristown, Tennessee, just go make white people mad. And poor Jim Ross is sitting there with the microphone going, what did I just sign up to do?
Now, question, was he on loan from WWE at the time, or was he?
I don't know how that entire story goes down, but I know that it was because obviously him and Jim are friends and right. They were starting to do the talent acquisitions. So, I mean, like, I think he brought him. He would ask for them to come in for more promos. Cause I mean, there's only so much, you know, putting Horner in your corner will do for you.
I hear you. Well, it was good to see Bob Caudle on TV again, but, yeah, I'll end the wrestling discussion by saying I think my favorite New Jack statement in Smoky Mountain was, I got a college degree and a criminal record, so I know a little something about making life decisions.
The fact that they took a camera crew with those title belts into freaking Compton and mm-hmm. walked out of there was one of the more ballsy decisions I've ever seen.
Yeah, and apparently they were supposed to work their way to an angle with The Undertaker. Did anything ever come of that?
No.
Or they already jumped to ECW by that
They were point. Already at ECW at the time.
Wow. Imagine what could have been.
I would have been entertained.
Of course. Undertaker coming out to his music, then all of a sudden you hear Natural Born Killers come out, New Jack's just throwing weapons at Undertaker, and he's like, sell for me, motherfucker, sell!
I'll make you sell!
As Gypsy Joe.
Oh my god. The whole line of oh, and here comes assault number five, and he takes a knife out on him. Up, and here comes assault with battery number five.
God, could you imagine Lance Russell being the play-by-play guy, and now he has an international object? All right, come on, this isn't a wrestling match.
Oh, he's using it against him. Oh, come on, get him out of there.
I love old school wrestling.
I miss that stuff. It Me used to too. Be more fun.
Me too. Thank you, Deep South Wrestling.
Oh, yeah, yes, absolutely. The C-Dub stuff with Gemma Jules has been absolutely fantastic for that old school wrestling feel.
Yes, and again, not to confuse it with that piece of shit Kevin Brannon. And to wrap up what I was saying before we move on to the Buddy Rich stuff, like I said, I like death matches when I feel like the match serves a purpose. When it's violence for the sake of violence without any angle or buildup or, you know, any rhyme or reason behind it, I don't like it. And, you know, that guy apparently has a very notorious background, which, you know, is sort of relating to like a dirty Dick Murdoch type, yes. Type background, which he denies to this day. But if you ever heard him talk, he tells you otherwise.
Anyway, except Dirty Dick Murdoch was endearing at times.
I wouldn't know. Anyways, but yes, Deep South Wrestling, keep up the great work. We are the rebels that forge from your hate
as you plan. Someone to fight with you and argue. Thank you for listening to the Music Aside podcast, brought to you by Anchor.fm and Ratsod Review. Check out the other shows on Ratsod Review, including Beyond Bushido, Old Man Metal's Musings, The Right Opinion, The Vieira Vault, The Team Otoki Podcast, The BS Sessions with Mark and Jerry, Just the Cheese Please, and The Friday Night Party with the great Harry Barnett and Evie. Graphics by Rocky Baya. For commissions, find them on Twitter at @ROCKYBAIA. Intro and outro music for the show is Lose Control by The Rebel Media, written by Jacqueline Guittard, Ernest Leuk, and Lou Mavs. If you'd like to donate to the channel, please donate to our PayPal at musicislifepodcast@gmail.com. If you're in a band and you want us to review your music, then contact us at loumavs@musicislifepodcast.com. Special thanks to Wayne Noon and Greg Noggle, with much love and gratitude to Aaron, Anna, and Alalicious. For more information, check out www.musicislifepodcast.com. And don't forget to check out www.ratsireview.com. Remember, all art is valid. Thanks for listening. Cheers.